an experience that most meditators come across and need to work with is the experience of painful physical experience that comes about through stillness of the body. There can be a temptation to keep shifting the posture around the physical discomfort that often arises. And it's very natural. In fact, I think that the just the stillness of the body, whether you're in a lying posture or a sitting posture or a standing posture, just the stillness of the body can create a little discomfort. And so, there are times when it's helpful to move, and yet we often move very quickly because we have a habit of fleeing from discomfort. Unpleasant experience creates the very strong habit of wanting to fix it, change it, get rid of it. And so it's very easy to follow through on that and just keep kind of shifting, sitting in just little shifts of the body, little shuffles. And it's you're losing an opportunity if you're doing that to begin to investigate something about the nature of the mind and the body, how they work together. Because what we can begin to recognize as we get curious about, and the curiosity that Pam spoke about that first day is such an important part of practice. Can we get curious about the actual experience of unpleasant physical sensation? As we do that, we actually can begin to discover that much, if not all, in fact, of what we call pain lies in our relationship to the physical sensations, not in the physical sensations themselves, not in the unpleasant themselves. It is possible, and we discover that it's possible to be with an unpleasant experience and not be reactive to it. And we see in that shift around not being reactive to unpleasant sensation that actually most of what we are reacting to is the mind that is saying, this is not okay, this is a problem, I need to fix this, I need to change this. And so we it's really helpful to start to explore this dynamic in our meditation, to explore the dynamic of the aversion to pain. There's one teaching that the Buddha offered that said when an ordinary person experiences an unpleasant sensation, they tend to react to that. Weep, moan, beat their breasts, wail, why me? Why is this happening to me? And he said that first unpleasant sensation, the physical unpleasant sensation, is met by a second unpleasant experience, a mental unpleasant experience, compounding the unpleasantness. In my experience, it multiplies the unpleasantness. It's not just an addition. it ratchets up the unpleasantness so fast. And so one exploration, first of all, allowing the reactivity, again, we're exploring the allowing. What I'd encourage is an exploration around physical pain that goes something like this. So as you begin, you recognize, okay, there's some unpleasant experience here, wanting to move. Remind yourself at the beginning, okay, it's okay to move if it gets too challenging. So that's okay. But give yourself an opportunity to explore this dynamic between the mind and the body. So let yourself know it's okay if it gets too hard. And then get curious about, first of all, I'd be curious about, well, what is the actual physical experience that's being reacted to? Because some of the time, it's actually the tiniest little thing. It's a little twinge in the knee that the mind has basically extrapolated into, it's going to be like this the entire sitting, and I cannot stand sitting here with this for 45 minutes. So the mind has picked up time and projected that the pain is going to continue and increase, and is reacting to that idea more than it's actually reacting to the experience of the little twinge. So that's the first thing to check in. What is the actual physical sensation? This can be really useful to explore with an itch. An itch tends to be a pretty powerfully unpleasant experience for us. It's a strong unpleasant experience. And yet, as far as I know, nobody has damaged their body for not moving to scratch an itch. And so you can let your mind relax that, okay, this isn't going to damage my body. You explore that unpleasant sensation. And notice how the mind kind of squeezes around it, reacts to it. What is it actually reacting to? There's the physical sensation of an itch, the strong kind of zzz sensation. Comes and goes in my experience. It appears strongly, then disappears for a moment, then appears strongly, and then disappears for a moment. Just watching that and noticing the mind that doesn't like it. And so in exploring a strong, unpleasant experience, first of all, check in, well, what is the actual unpleasant experience? How unpleasant is it really? And is what's being reacted to more some mental reaction than it is actually the physical experience? That's one thing to check. And the next thing to check into is, you know, if we are having an unpleasant experience and there is a strong reaction, an aversion, really helpful to just see if you can turn to that aversion. Take your attention out of the physical unpleasant experience itself and recognize, oh, this is what not wanting this to be here is like. Often in my experience, the aversion is kind of a whole body bracing, kind of like the whole body is like holding tight. And so there's the mental pushing away, either a kind of a lashing out or a get me out of here movement with aversion, the physical response of the aversion, that are separate from the actual unpleasant physical sensation. So recognizing that and being curious about the aversion itself. As you watch the aversion, you may recognize the relationship between strengthening and weakening of the aversion and the experience of pain. So explore this, seeing if you can be curious about this as much as possible. And again, if it gets to the point where the mind kind of cannot do this investigation because it's so reactive, kind of gone into a rabbit hole of reactivity around the pain, then it may be time to gently remind yourself, okay, it's okay to stop doing this investigation now. Try to do this out of compassion rather than reactivity. You know, it's maybe time to stop doing this investigation now. And so consciously being mindful of shifting your posture to relieve the discomfort. So playing with it, being curious about the exploration of discomfort. So much of our lives, so much of what happens in our lives comes about through reactivity to discomfort. And if we're not learning the skills around navigating that in our practice, we will kind of just be buffeted around by circumstances. So this is it's a powerful tool to learn this skill in our meditation. Can be very, very useful to us in our lives. So there's a few minutes for questions, if there are any questions this morning. Yeah. So the question is about posture, and if you notice that while you're sitting, you know, that your body is tilted or in, you know, often we'll find that our bodies kind of move into a slump or lean or something. And is it skillful to shift? I would say yes, and do it mindfully. Because, you know, if you're in a kind of a tipped posture or a slumped posture, it can be adding stress to the system, to the body. But it's helpful to recognize, first of all, I'd recognize, this is the experience. Sometimes just the recognition of it, you know, you might be curious about, sometimes we can use requests. I suggested that in the sitting around, you know, may the body relax, may the mind relax, you know, even may the attention rest with the breathing. You might explore, you know, asking the body, how would you correct this? You know, so that you're not like trying to do it so much, but what might be a way for this to become more balanced? And seeing if there's a kind of a natural support that the system offers to help balance the body. And you're also welcome to just, you know, maybe open your eyes and do it consciously. You know, it whatever we are mindful of, we are cultivating that muscle. So it's fine. You know, you recognize that. Notice if there's any reactivity to that having happened, and then shift, correct the posture. And then you might also be curious. I mean, you might use your posture as an anchor and be curious about what happens. How does that happen? Is it when the mind wanders? Or is it just a kind of a relaxation of body? It may just be that the body is relaxed but slightly off center, and so in the relaxation it kind of shifts. So you could also be curious about what's bringing it about. Yeah. Other questions? I had one question on the board to offer tips about lying meditation that will result in the least drowsiness. most of you have probably seen that I do lying meditation. I do a lot of lying meditation because I have sciatica and the sitting posture. I can do a certain amount of it in the day. And when I'm teaching, I'm pretty much at my max. So I do the lying posture for my sitting posture. And I will say a couple of things about it. It's definitely possible to be fully mindful while doing lying meditation. It takes training. In my experience, for most people, it does take some training, because when the body is prone like that, there's a strong habit of sleepiness. And so when you put your body in that posture, the body basically goes, okay, time to go to sleep. And so in my experience, it took some time for the mind to begin to recognize this is a meditation posture. And I have a specific lying posture that is different than my sleeping posture, you know, so that there's no confusion in my mind. Am I meditating, or am I trying to go to sleep? And so that's a support, creating a specific meditation posture for lying practice. It will depend on your body what the particular posture is. And so if you need to do lying meditation and you haven't found a posture, I'd be happy to speak with you about that. I will also say that, you know, the sitting meditation is really great. I mean, I would really love it if I could do more sitting meditation. There's something about the alertness, the uprightness of the body that provides energy to the system. And that energy in the uprightness can be kind of corralled towards the meditation. When you're doing a lying posture, the mind has to do it all. And so there's a little bit of an art to not getting, you know, too tight in the mind around keeping the mind alert in the lying posture. And so I would say that, you know, if you have a particular physical ailment that is exacerbated by the sitting, that you practice with cultivating the lying posture, which I did. I spent quite a bit of time cultivating that. There's some specific tools that really help that, which some of you have seen me use, probably the arm at right angles to the floor, which basically gives you feedback, because it's very easy when you're doing lying meditation to fall asleep and wake up and have no clue that you've fallen asleep. Zero clue. Like, the only clue you get is that, wow, that was a really short sitting. Oh, the bell rang. Oh, wow, that was a really short sitting. So if you have your arm at right angles to the floor, it will fall if you fall asleep. Now, it may not wake you up, but at least you'll get the feedback when you wake up that you have fallen asleep. And you can start to track, you know, even if the mind wanders, the arm will tend to do this. You know, I sometimes find my arm a kind of like this. It's like, okay, the mind has not been present and can bring it upright. So this adds a little bit of feedback to the system. Also can be helpful to have the eyes open if you tend to fall asleep. But what I have found is that it basically takes some time for the mind to adjust. I've worked with people on retreat, and they often say it takes maybe a day or two to adjust to the lying posture. I did it at home, and it really took several weeks before the mind, I did it in my daily sitting when I needed to shift, and it took a couple weeks before the mind was not just in this kind of, almost daydreamy state. But then at some point it's like, oh wow, actually the mind is alert right now. So it can take some time to adjust to the lying posture. If you find that you snore, and I do if I fall asleep when I'm doing the lying meditation, at certain times of the day, I take myself out of the meditation hall because the tension of trying to not fall asleep is extra. And so I put myself in my room. It's like if I fall asleep, it's okay. And I wake up, you know, it's like when you fall asleep when you're doing sitting meditation, you get that feedback. You don't get that feedback when you're doing lying meditation so much, because the dropping of the arm doesn't usually do it. So it's a practice. It's a skill that can be cultivated. It's not easy. I mean, it's a little bit of a challenge. And yet, for all of us, as we age, I would encourage a little bit of practice with it, because there's going to be some point of our lives where we haven't got a choice but to do lying meditation if we want to be present. And so cultivating that capacity, and I can't really take questions right now, unfortunately, cultivating that capacity will support us. So we have our first day of groups today. I'll meet with people. We'll have 9:45 groups, and then Pam will also have an 11 o'clock group. My second group is with those of you, a few of you in the group are working in the kitchen, so that will be an evening group. So I'll meet with people in room one, which is the meeting just next to the office off the community hall. Pam will meet with people in room 100, which is down the hall by the elevator, turn left, and it's at the end of that hallway. There's a sign clearly marking room 100. Any other announcements? There was a question about where yoga might be. There's not a designated space so much for yoga. You're welcome to do yoga in your rooms. We do request that you not do yoga in the walking room next door. You're welcome to do yoga in the community room on the carpet. That's a nice place to do yoga. If it's a nice warm day, you're welcome to do yoga on the deck, the forest deck. People have done that. It's a little cold these days. It might be too cold to do it outside. But there's a variety of places where you can do the yoga. I think that's all the announcements. Enjoy your day.